Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
We've got Robert Crane.
In 3, 2, 1.
He's a Microsoft MVP, a Microsoft
certified trainer,
an Office 365 specialist,
blogger, podcaster, social media enthusiast, and one-of-a-kind speaker who has a gift for explaining tech to the average person so they can understand it.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
There's also myself, Mark Keane. All right, let's move on. I'm the voiceover guy, producer of this podcast, blogger, speaker,
Microsoft
Azure MVP, and an Azure/PowerShell Premier field engineer working for
Microsoft,
helping people with the journey and making sense of Microsoft Azure.
You
are listening to the
Need to Know podcast.
It's your source for the very latest in Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations all about Azure and Office 365.
I'm Jess Dodson, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and I'm joined again by Mark Keane. Mark, welcome.
Hello, thank you for that little introduction, Rob. How's everything been on your side?
Not too bad. You've been busy. We're looking. I'm looking to go to Build this week. What about yourself?
Well, I'll see what I can do. But how's your week been? Has it been busy over the last 5 days or 7 days since we last spoke?
There's always stuff to do. I know that you've been traveling a lot. You've been over there in far away Western Australia doing some work there. Why don't you let people know what you've been doing and the challenges you've had over there?
It's been beautiful. Actually, let me come back to that in a sec, but I will just run this by you first because this is quite interesting. So, yes, I flew from Sydney due west to Perth in the westerly direction. Now, Rob, the Earth, right, is a huge planet, right? It spins, does one revolution every 24 hours because the sun stays put, and that's how it creates morning and night, because it goes around, it sort of spins around. So, if the Earth is spinning around one revolution every 24 hours, it spins at a speed of 1,600 kilometers per hour, right, in an anti-clockwise direction. If the plane takes off from Sydney and flies west to Perth, and the plane flies at a speed of around 880 kilometers per hour, it's never going to get to Perth. Do you know the answer to that?
Yeah, the answer's the colour purple, isn't it?
Do you want to have a second go?
No. It's too early to do maths at this time. Just keep going.
Well, I was up there in the sky on the way back from Perth, and basically I asked a question, and the clue is this, is gravity, the gravitational pull. Now, if you're watching space videos online and you look at Earth spinning from far, far back, you'll notice the clouds don't stay put. The clouds actually spin with the Earth, and the clouds are actually up in the sky. So that's the clue. So basically what happens is Earth's got its atmosphere, and that whole atmosphere with the gravitational pull spins with the Earth. So just because the plane's up in the sky, 11 kilometers high up in the sky, doesn't mean to say Earth is going to spin away from it. It's going to be within the same atmosphere, so it'll be pulled with the Earth at a speed of 1,600 kilometers per hour. So there you go. Interesting, isn't it? And yes, I was over there in Perth for Microsoft, had an engagement with a large mining company. They were looking at putting all of their servers, their disaster recovery, into Azure, like pretty much everybody else is doing these days. And they had two data centers, and they wanted to look at the secondary data center and save costs and look at the value that Azure Site Recovery has to offer, and also to the backups. So Azure Backup Server and Azure Site Recovery were very well accepted, and went through death by PowerPoint and did a few demos, and they were very, very happy by the end of it. So they can now make well-informed decisions.
Excellent. All right. Well, I've got a Azure conundrum for you. Would you like me to ask you my Azure conundrum?
Go for it.
Okay. So did you hear recently that Amazon bought a company called Whole Foods in the US for something like, I don't know, a couple of $1 billion worth of revenue? Did you hear about that?
I heard something like that.
Well, Do you also know who is one of Azure's largest customers in the US?
Ooh.
Whole Foods, which has suddenly been bought by Amazon. So that now means that Amazon is Azure's largest customer.
No.
How about that?
Yes.
So are they going to shift all of Whole Foods' data center over to Azure? Over to AWS from Azure? That will be interesting. I can't see that happening, so it'll be very interesting. Here's another one.
Well, hang on. Stay on that for a sec. Will they move it across? Well, they could do if they wanted to, but then is there going to be enough business justification? Because they're essentially giving money to a competitor.
It's interesting, and also too, obviously, AWS probably doesn't have the PaaS stuff that Azure does. And if Azure, you know, again, so it makes it, it's a very interesting business decision. But this second part is also tied into this, right? So Walmart is one of the biggest retailers in the US who is constantly fighting Amazon. Guess what most of Walmart's infrastructure is currently built on? AWS. Now, they're not very happy with Amazon for opening up retail stores and competing against them directly. So they're now saying they're going to move away from AWS, probably to Azure.
So in the same boat as Woolies, what they're doing for that same reason, because Amazon are opening up grocery stores here in Australia, and Woolies basically have their stuff at the moment, some of it hosted in AWS, so they're doing the same thing, essentially moving to
Azure.
Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it? So now we've got these really big players, and you know, all of a sudden, for political reasons, let's say, you've got to then shift all your infrastructure as a service from one provider to another. So it looks as though the migrations will be a never-ending story. So it's going to keep a lot of little engineers and Oompa Loompas quite busy running around data centers, moving stuff around. So it depends
with Whole Foods, like how intertwined their services are within Azure. I mean, you could have it set up in such a way so it is very, very much intertwined. It's going to be very difficult to get out.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It is, and again, they're one of the biggest Azure customers, so it must be a pretty high investment. So, but it is interesting to say that Amazon is now one of Azure's largest customers.
Wow, that's all right. That's cool. Oh, that's awesome.
All right. So, speaking about Azure news, why don't you hit us up with some
stuff that's come through over the last 7 days? While I've been flat out busy, but stuff that I've caught is the fact that Microsoft Azure is using AMD EPYC. Is that how it's pronounced, Rob? EPYC.
Sounds good to me.
EPYC server chips by the end of the year. So Microsoft is helping AMD make a return to the server chip market by setting up plans for using AMD's EPYC server chips for Azure. The new AMD EPYC server chips offer more performance and are cheaper than those from Intel, ranging from about $400 to $4,000 per chip in price. Intel, however, remain the giant in the server chip market, as AMD has not really put up much competition. Intel's data center division sales totaled roughly $18 billion, while AMD's total revenue was only about $4 billion. So there we go. More info to that in the good old show notes that we have. Also here too, Avanade and Hawahi to sell Microsoft Azure Stack appliances. You can either order a Dell HPE or Lenovo Azure Stack appliance by mid-year. If you want Azure Stack system on Cisco UCS hardware, it'll still be out slightly later in the year. Cisco's target is quarter three or quarter four. Avanade announced earlier this month that it would offer users a choice of running Azure Stack on-premises, at client sites, at remote locations, or hosted in Avanade's own data centers. Avanade will offer Azure Stack through Accenture's cloud platform, so it's ACP for short, sometime in the second half of the year, with hardware choices being space constrained. They're going to have turnkey Azure Stacks with four nodes in 6U, including switching and management host, or density and capacity optimized Azure Stack solution with four nodes in a 8U configuration, including switching and a management host. Both are expandable to the 12 node maximum. Now, Hawahi earlier this month announced plans to sell Azure Stack running in its Fusion server and Cloud Engine switches, and to integrate Hawahi's eSite management software with Azure Stack as well. Hawahi plans to start selling Hawahi Hybrid Cloud for Microsoft Azure Stack by the first quarter of calendar 2018. So that's a little bit more to wait, but it's coming. So we'll put a link into that for the show notes. Also coming this week, we have talked about this, Rob, on the show before, and Microsoft's Build Tour is pretty much knocking at our door. It's just around the corner. There you go. There's the door knock. It's coming to Sydney, happening this Thursday, the 29th of June at the International Convention Centre, Cockle Bay, 14 Darling Drive, in case you need the address, or you can just grab a train, whichever. The Microsoft Build Tour brings the best of Microsoft Build right to you. Developers building line of business or consumer applications using cloud or traditional desktop technologies will hear firsthand from Microsoft experts about the latest technical news and updates from the Microsoft Build Conference. So it also features a two-day Hackfest. So make sure you register, because registrations are still open. Click on the link in the show notes, or you can just Bing Microsoft Build Tour and search for it and do it that way if you like too. But yeah, this Thursday, are you coming, Rob?
Yep, I'll certainly make time to go and have a look at it. I think that we're moving to a software world. The more you know about dev, the better off you're going to be. So certainly on my calendar for this week.
Fantastic. And the last piece of news I have is about step-by-step guidance, learning at your own pace. Now, this is always good if you've got time and you need to be disciplined. And I will say one thing being a PFE in my role, I have to stay up to date, and I have no choice. I have to stay up to date. So it's not about being disciplined. It's like I have to do it, and it's no better way of learning, because you've really got to do it. So basically online now, there's 5 new on-demand jumpstart programs available to help you build your Azure or EMS practice. So what's available on offer is Azure Backup and Azure Site Recovery. Woohoo! Azure Virtual Machines. Yeah, they're always expanding, bringing new ones out all the time. Creating virtual machines with high availability, enterprise mobility plus security, that's the EMS part, and hybrid identity. So these on-demand programs include webinar recordings, heavy with demos showing you how to implement the technology, as well as step-by-step hands-on independent learning assignments. You can also leverage the members-only Yammer groups, where you can consult with the Microsoft team and interact with your peers to get your questions answered. These on-demand programs are best suited for companies who are looking to learn the fundamentals and are ready to start an Azure or EMS practice today. A link in the show notes for that. Cool. I know, Rob, you're disciplined, aren't you?
That's me. Yeah. I've already got those on my radar and looking to organise some free time to go through those. But
because you don't watch TV, normal TV, do you?
No, that's right.
You don't watch Prison Break or anything else. You just watch these things and you set aside and you manage to get them done.
Yep, that's right. And then I can use that to make you feel guilty because you're wasting your time watching Prison Break. Now, some other Azure things which I don't think you mentioned, which I don't think we've covered, is that the Azure disks have now gone up to 4 terabytes.
Oh, yeah. But that's not everywhere yet.
But still, pretty big news. I mean, obviously, it's gone coming from a 1 terabyte to a 4 terabyte. So that's a pretty big increase. Mm-hmm. We've also got encryption for managed disks too, I see.
Yes. That's also come out.
And also new VPN gateways as well. So that's pretty cool. Lots of new stuff coming
up. Oh, yeah, the faster ones.
Yeah, exactly.
So what have they got up to now?
I'd have to look at the stats, but there's 3 new levels, I think. So they sit above the premium offering. So again, we'll put the links in the show notes. But plenty of new stuff coming out for Azure. Now, on the Office 365 side, what we've had added is Forms. So Microsoft had a product called Forms, which was part of an education-only SKU. This allowed you to run simple quizzes to solicit feedback, typically for classrooms and teachers and students to get them to answer quizzes and stuff. That is now rolling out to commercial tenants. So you can go to forms.office.com and use your Office 365 login to start using Forms. Now, again, this isn't Power Apps. This isn't the deep dive Forms like InfoPath. path. This is pretty basic stuff, but again, it's a great way to capture simple information and again cut down those emails asking everybody's opinion. So have a look at the new forms area service from Office 365. Another service which is changing and updating is basically Microsoft Stream. So Stream is a replacement to the Office 365 video. It allows you to have a library for your corporate videos. The difference is firstly technology, but also the Stream product now has a free offering, stream.microsoft.com, and you can then get a tie-in to your Office 365 license if you have an enterprise SKU. Over the next time period, Stream will be replacing Office 365 video, so you'll probably see both of them in your tenant temporarily, but fear not, your Office 365 videos will be migrated into Stream, but you can start using the Stream service today. Now, I don't know if you've seen the video indexer that Microsoft have put up. Basically, you can upload a video, it will then transcribe it, it will do facial recognition and tag people in videos. So again, go and have a look at the new offering called Stream from Microsoft. Pretty powerful and a good indication that video is becoming more and more important even inside businesses. The last little bit of news I've got here is around Microsoft Teams. They've now added the ability to do direct integration with third-party cloud providers. So what you can do is go into your Teams, go into the file area, and you'll see an option to connect to a cloud storage service, so Box, Dropbox, Google Drive. And then what that does is basically maps that location inside the Teams app. And what you can also do, which is I think is pretty cool, is you can then copy, for example, from your Dropbox into your Teams, which then ends up in the SharePoint backend, which Teams is built on. So again, you can use it as a pseudo migration tool, which is really, really handy. So again, all the information on that will be in the show notes, but watch out, again, very keen on that stuff with Teams, because again, it helps people move their data into the Microsoft environment and into the SharePoint backend.
Interesting. So I've just pulled up here the new Azure VPN gateways, 6 times faster.
Yeah,
mission
amazing.
Critical workloads, both performance and reliability. So new generation with better performance, better SLA, and at the same price as what you love before, the older gateway, same price as those.
So there's lots and lots, and again, it seems to me as though, again, there's lots and lots of stuff being added now to Office 365, but also into Azure. So we're seeing more and more components being upgraded and added and enhanced and now extended. So they've got their base of their disks, and now they're, you know, upgrading them from 1 to 4 terabytes. So again, we're getting more and more capacity, which means that this is where the scalability, the agility of the cloud is probably going to win out, because, you know, Microsoft just keep adding these additional resources for effectively the same cost. So again, really, so, really powerful.
Question for you, what was the maximum speed, if you remember, this is all like statistics, what was the maximum speed of a VPN gateway before?
I couldn't tell you, it was something maybe 20 megabit, I can't remember off the top of my head. I sit down and
okay, walk. All right, well, now it goes up to not 1 gigabit, but 1.25 gigabits per second. Because I remember like a 1 gigabit connection was, I think, a requirement for Express Route before, so right now, this is up to 1.25 gig. That's stupidly quick.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that, well, again, what we're seeing is this, now that they've got the infrastructure in place, they're now able to optimize and enhance and provide more, you know, options for people. Just, again, shows you, I think, the flexibility that Microsoft's now building into its, you know, its data center environment. So certainly the way to go. And the VPN is probably the most common way to start doing hybrid. So to improve that makes a lot of sense. Also to improve the storage capacity also makes a lot of sense, because people want to move more and more data into the cloud.
So here we go. So you see a VPN gateway 2 at 1 gigabits per second provides a 5 times performance improvement at the same price as the old standard and high performance gateways. So yeah, cool. So they're giving us more speed. So which is good, because if you're in the same city as Azure, for example, I can do a ping from a home internet connection to a speedtest.net endpoint in the middle of Sydney somewhere, so in the same city, and it's 9 milliseconds latency. That's not bad. That's pretty good, and that's over the public internet too. So you could have essentially a VPN connection at a very, very high speed and do away with the complexities that is Express Route, for example.
Yeah, so plenty of options there, like we said, and we'll put the information in the show notes, but we do need to probably round it up and get it into our guest for this episode. Anything else from you, Mark, before we sign off?
No, so who have we got for our guest today?
Our guest is a returning guest, Taz Gray. Taz is going to talk about how to automate a lot of the billing when it comes to Office 365 and CSP. So, good one out there for people looking to optimize their billing to the customers.
Okay, one other thing we forgot to mention. We've got to thank our sponsors, Rode Microphones, because this Rode that I'm talking on now is beautiful quality. It's just awesome. It's the whole thing. It's a proper studio mic. What is it? It's a Rode. What's the brand? What's the name of it? S1. So if you're on the Rode website, look for S1. It's a dynamic or condensed. I'm not too sure the difference, but I wrote a blog post on it anyway. And I bought this XLR lead as well to go with it, which cost an arm and a leg, but that's not part of it. But basically, yeah, make sure you get the right equipment, and Rode can definitely provide the mics, and so thanks to them, it's this podcast is possible.
All right, and how do people get in contact with you if they want to give some positive feedback now that you fixed the sound for your Surface?
Yeah, because I restarted it. That's why it's Windows. Positive feedback can be grabbed through, or negative feedback, but basically everybody's contacting me on Twitter at Mark Keane, so MarkKean, and apologies to, there's about a few people that contacted me last week. I haven't got back to them yet because I was flat out in Perth last week, but I will come back to you very, very shortly.
Cool. All right. Well, you can contact me at DirectorCIA on the Twitter as well. We appreciate that. If you do find the show helpful, please rate it on iTunes. Let other people know about it. Send in any suggestions or comments, and keep up to date with what's happening on the Need to Know podcast. I'm back with a return guest, Taz Gray. Taz, welcome.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be back.
Yes, it's been a while since we've been on the show. So what's been happening in the world of Taz since we last spoke?
Yeah, it's I actually think the last time I was on was episode 80. So I think, what are you up to now, 160-odd?
Yeah, we're getting to 160. We're doubling, thanks to our producer, wonderful producer Mark, who writes PowerShell that automates all our podcasts for it, so we don't have to do any more. what has been happening in the world of Taz since episode 80?
All right. So I think the last time I was on, I'm not sure what we spoke about, but just so much been happening, really. But obviously, as you would know, Rob, we're an IT consulting firm here in Melbourne, and we're very heavily focused on Office 365. And obviously a lot's changed in that space, and we've been very busy working with our clients around that. But obviously that's not what I'm here to talk to you about today.
So one of the big challenges, obviously, is now that we're in a world where Office 365 is becoming more widespread, Microsoft has changed the way it remunerates or rewards partners from being a per license sale to also being a consumption based model now, where people need to consume it. But that obviously doesn't mean that things like the billing and getting people onto this new scheme is that easy. So obviously you're coming on to talk about potentially a solution you've got to this, but why was there a need to do this in your opinion? What was the driving need from your point of view that you needed to do something like this to solve these sort of, you know, billing issues?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we were very early on the Office 365 bandwagon in Australia. And as you'll know, and I'm sure all the Australian listeners will know, in the early days it was only available through Telstra. And one of the benefits of that was that Telstra actually took care of the billing, and then they would provide you, pay your commission at the end of every month, which was, from our point of view, was quite good in some ways, because we didn't have to worry about that. Then, of course, Microsoft came along not long after and introduced their direct billing model, which we then took on board, because for I guess reasons I won't get into, but yeah, obviously working with Microsoft directly was more appealing to us than with Telstra. And again, Microsoft took care of the billing, so there was nothing for us to worry about there. We just got paid a commission every so often, and it was fairly easy to manage. But then, of course, as you just mentioned, Microsoft kind of shifted the goalposts on us a little bit, and all of a sudden there was this consumption-based criteria attached to the commission, whereby if they were just using email, you only got a smaller percentage of what was already a very small percentage. And so obviously that made it harder for us. And of course, the other problem with Microsoft or Telstra billing your customers is that you don't really own that billing relationship, which for a lot of people is obviously not ideal. And we wanted to move away from that. So then came the CSP program, which I know you've had a few people on recently to talk about that.
So just before you do that, let's just give people a bit of a breakdown. So in Australia here, we started off with effectively a single supplier, which was our major telco. They would basically sell the license, they would take the money, as you said, and give the partner a trailing commission. Mm-hmm. And then they moved from that to include Microsoft, then opened it up to have open licensing, right? So the difference with open licensing was it's more a traditional model where it's a 3-year plan, and you've got a, and it really doesn't work for the subscription model. So Microsoft then introduced what it's called its CSP model, which allows the partners to bill direct and collect direct. But also in the background, we've still got the Telstra billing. We've still got customers that can pay with a credit card and be billed by Microsoft direct. Mm-hmm. And we still have open. So there are a few out here. So what we're going to focus on is the CSP side of it. So we've gone through all that. We're now into the CSP side of it. Now, obviously, the CSP means that the billing responsibility now shifts back to the partner. And that's both a good and a challenging thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So it obviously provides you with the flexibility to set your own margin, which is great, and to bundle that into whatever other monthly costs or services you're providing for your customer. But of course, it is a difficult thing to manage. And I think for managed service providers and IT consultants, the challenge around billing Office 365 is somewhat new, because we've never really had a product like Office 365, which I would describe as, it's quite fluid. So depending on the customer, the subscriptions that they've got can change, you know, multiple times within a week or, you know, and within a month. So it's a very hard thing, I guess, to stay on top of. You almost need
So I was going to say, what we're seeing is I think we started out with, when Office 365 came out, there were, you know, Business Premium, there was Enterprise E3, and people tended to buy that across their organization, or tended to be sold it across their organization. But now, as they become more sophisticated, what we're seeing is that maybe the managing director has the top of the line E5, the PA has an E3, some of the office people may have an E1, and people out on the factory floor might have a kiosk. So we're getting this mix and match, and because the flexibility of the Office 365 allows you to chop and change, and all of that restriction has been removed, so you can now really customize the licenses. Now, again, great flexibility, great for the customer, but again, when it comes to billing, it's a real challenge. And I think this is where the open model sort of fails a bit, because if you have people changing and modifying their licensing, which they can do, that can make the billing side of it very challenging. So again, that I think is sort of the base level that we're at now, and we're seeing a lot more variability when it comes to implementing licensing.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. And also to add to that, the number of add-ons and, I guess, additional licenses outside of your core Office 365 seems to be increasing as well. So we've got clients who are using PSTN conferencing for Skype, a lot of Power BI Pro licensing as well, and Dynamics is starting to come into the picture for some clients too. So all of a sudden there's all of these SKUs that you have to manage. And I guess my point, in addition to that, what I was getting at earlier is those the numbers that each client has can fluctuate, you know, multiple times throughout the month. So you need to be, I guess, very diligent in tracking that, or you know, keeping a spreadsheet. I'm not sure how people are doing it, but if you sort of lose track, it very quickly you can start losing money, because there's not a lot of margin in this stuff if you're selling it as a straight product. So you need to make sure you're on top of it, and really it consumes a lot of time for something that doesn't bring a lot of return.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is the traditional MSP model has been about, we do everything, you know, one bill to rule them all sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is, as you mentioned, is the admin overhead for managing licensing, which we all know that in our space, we just love doing, don't we, Taz? We just love doing licensing. So again, that this makes this additional admin overhead. And I think also too, as you mentioned, it can be very confusing, because if you're a technical person, perhaps like us, you understand the SKUs and what's involved, but if you've got an office admin person, or perhaps someone else who's responsible for deploying the licenses or billing the license, it can be very, very confusing as to which license is actually what.
Yeah, definitely. And and also I guess there's pro-ratering to consider here as well, because we get billed by the number of days, you know, from the distributor, you know, within that first month, and it's just very complicated. And I think what my belief is, and from what I've seen and heard speaking to people, I guess, out in the channel, is that a lot of people aren't doing CSP for that reason, because it's all a bit too hard. And I certainly felt that way myself in the early days, which is what led us to developing a solution that was, I guess, somewhat or almost entirely automated.
All right, so why don't you give us a bit of an idea of what the solution actually does? Where can it actually help? Where does it actually help your business achieve, you know, a better result for customers?
Okay, so I guess like most IT companies, we use a PSA tool, and for us that's ConnectWise. I know others use Autotask, but my so, you know, based on my experience with these tools, is that they're not great when it comes to recurring billing. They're generally good for, I guess, monthly agreements and things like that, but when you start getting a lot of fluctuation and you need that consistent automated monthly billing, they tend not to be so good. So what I figured out, you know, as a result of that, is that there are other options for us, and we ended up, I guess, looking at a product called WHMCS, which is a web hosting automation platform. It does client management, billing, and support for web hosts. So I think a lot of IT companies would already have that. We already did. And the reason being we had it was, to manage domain name registration for our clients, and also cPanel accounts.
So just quickly, if somebody hasn't got that, is there a cost to it? What sort of investment's required?
Yeah, there is a small cost to it. So it's around $20 a month for mm-hmm. the license. And it just requires a cPanel account to install it on. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
So we were using that anyway. And because of the automation and its ability to do recurring billing quite well, it just made sense that, well, let's start using this to manage our Office 365 licensing for our customers. So initially what we actually did was we were just putting the licenses into WHMCS, billing our customer, and then we were going off logging into the distributor website and ordering the licenses. So there was a disconnect there, but it was manageable. As long as we were sort of, I guess, diligent about placing the order in WHMCS first, invoicing the customer, and then ordering the license, it was generally okay. But it was by no means perfect, and there was no real, I guess, easy way to keep track of what we were billing versus what we were being charged by the distributor. Which, as I mentioned earlier, you want to know, I guess, how you don't want to make a mistake there. As soon as you miss a license or two, you very quickly start to go backwards.
So just a question, how many licenses would you say that you are currently looking after? What's a sort of a roundish number of what sort of license management that you have in Office 365 at the moment?
So we've got 1,000 as a rough mm-hmm. number. And that we've got to 1,000 pretty quickly. And I think that the only reason, or what's enabled us to be able to do that, is having this. Because otherwise, I feel that if with these CSP products, that if you haven't got a good system in place to manage it, it almost psychologically becomes a burden, and which I think gets in the way when you're trying to sell it. It sort of sits in the back of your mind, at least for me it did. So
is this basically the system is to help you manage the procurement of the licenses, but does it also manage the client billing side of it as well? Does it do both sides?
Yeah, that's right. It does both. So what we were just using it for the billing, and then the procurement was still a manual process. And I, coming from a development background, that really frustrated me, because I knew it was something that we could automate, but the problem was there was no distributor that was actually offering an API to allow that to happen. So what ended up happening, just by pure coincidence I suppose, is that I did hear that one of the distributors were offering an API, and I guess once I found out about that, I started to look at it, and then once I realized it was possible, we started to develop against it.
So that API that you've developed against, I mean, that's really a developer thing, isn't it? It's something that someone needs some coding experience to do. It's not something you could knock up on a weekend or something.
No, definitely not. And it's, yeah, I guess the scope of the task is probably a little bit greater than one.
Okay, so obviously, I mean, what sort of, how long did it take you to sort of get this up and running? Once you decided that you wanted to go that way and you wanted to access the API and pull in that information and connect to the distributor or the vendor, how long did it actually take you to get that, you know, up and running?
So to get a working prototype together was maybe a couple of weeks, and I think we would have started that process almost a year ago now, and we're still developing. So it is it's an ongoing process, but to get something working, yeah, a couple of weeks.
All right, so on the other side, from the, you know, distributor's API, how supportive have they been, and how much has that API changed? Has it been fairly static, and have you been able to get the information from them, or you know, what's that sort of looked like to tie into?
Yeah, look, generally speaking, I'm not sure if I can mention names here, but I'm quite happy to talk about that distributor if I'm allowed to. But
yeah, sure, no mention by all means. I mean, we're all about honesty, you know, and you know, making sure that everybody knows what's going on. So yeah, by all means.
Great. So the distributor that I speak of is Ripe, and to your question, Robert, they've been great. They've obviously, they see the benefit of this too, and I think we were probably one of the first people to actually get in there and really leverage their API. So we were pioneers in a way, and we did I guess hit on a few issues there, and they've been great. They've worked with us and helped us, you know, get this thing moving. So they've just initially, when we started, they were on API version 1, and they've recently rolled out the new version of the API, which has some really good improvements in it and made it a little bit easier for us too. So they've been really good, really supportive, and yeah, again, they really see the value in what we're doing, and excuse me, the benefit for their partners.
Okay, so basically you've got a middleware, let's call it, that sits between the customer and the vendor, mm-hmm. that gives you a dashboard that allows you to procure and to bill licensing. Would that be a fair summary?
Yeah, so exactly. So what it actually is an add-on for WHMCS. So WHMCS is very extendable, I should say. So it does allow you to customize it. It's one of the selling points of the product, and that it's quite a mature product. So it's very, there's a lot of documentation around how to do that, which is great. And what we've done is we've got it to a point where you place an order in the billing system. Once that order gets approved, it goes off and talks to the RIPE API. It says, this is how many subscriptions we've got. Can you please update? That all happens seamlessly in the background, and you sit back and
wait. So there's a hands-off, basically. The customer orders directly and is being passed through to the distributor. Is that how it's sort of happening, or are you, like, confirming it or verifying that the customer is actually ordering the right thing?
It's possible for the customer to order their own license, but we have found that in most cases they don't want to. So we're still doing that for them, and they need guidance quite often as well as to what license they want. But for those that know what they want and just want to go in and add or remove a few licenses, it supports that.
Okay, now on the billing side, do you invoice out of your accounting system, or does this system also do the billing, or effectively does it pass the license count to your billing system? How does the client go about paying for these licenses?
Yeah, good question. So it does do the billing for us and the invoicing. So it sends the invoices, but it then there's a gateway between it and Xero. So all of that information gets pushed through to Xero, but Xero really just acts as the general ledger.
Okay, so one of the models that Microsoft talks about when it comes to CSP is the fact that you can bundle your own services with the licensing and provide a white labeled solution and invoice the client for everything bundled together. Mm-hmm. Is that the way you're going, or are you billing the licenses individually out of this automated system and then doing services as a secondary invoice? How are you handling that?
We do both. So traditionally what we've done is we've just sold licenses, and that's in addition to the services we're providing. But we've recently launched our own cloud, we're calling it our cloud managed service type product, and that's cloud complete. And the way we do that is we just bill them one figure for the month, and that includes Office 365 and it includes a bunch of other stuff too. But again it pushes that provisioning of the Office 365 licensing through to RIPE automatically, so we don't have to worry about that.
So what about the situation where you've got a totally new client comes on board, wants 10, 15 business premium licenses? Will it provision the tenant, do all that sort of stuff for you as well?
Absolutely. So there's a bit of logic in there. So when we're ordering for a new client, it'll go off and it'll actually have a look and see, okay, well, this customer in WHMCS, are they linked to a tenant in the Prime Portal? Prime Portal is RIPE's web portal.
Distributor portal, yep.
Yep. And now if it can't find one, it sort of prompts you and says, well, hang on a minute, we can't order any licenses because we don't know which tenant to put them in. So there's two things we can do here. We can create a new tenant for you, and if you select that option, it gives you a text box to put in the Microsoft prefix, dot on Microsoft prefix. Mm-hmm. And it'll go off and check against the Microsoft API to make sure it's available. Or you can link it to an existing tenant. So, in some scenarios, you might bring a customer across and you've got to transition that tenant into the CSP. And then once that's done, you can just link it up and away you go.
All right, so this billing basically is all the CSP model. There's no, credit card or open. It's all basically CSP. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's pure CSP.
Cool. All right. So how long have you had this, to a state where it's been, effectively used in your business? How long have you had it in place that it's been giving you benefits in your business?
I would say around October last year. I think so, probably 9 months.
All right, so what in that 9 months, what sort of differences can you point to that investing the time and getting this all working, developing it out, and then implementing it has given your business?
Well, it's just meant we've got one less thing to do now, and we can just sell Office 365, and it's friction, there's no friction anymore. So it really means that instead of worrying about have we billed correctly and, you know, that kind of thing, it's we can focus more on delivering the services and, you know, adding more.
So I assume that's the case because the licensing cost, if they do change, is automatically reflected in the panel and the billings and all that sort of stuff. So it just removes, like I said, those little rounding errors that can end up costing you money when they start aggregating.
Yeah, and so the other thing that I guess my greatest fear in CSP was getting the billing wrong, and, you know, then obviously that affects your margin, and I don't want that to happen. So what we've done is every day it sends a billing report, and it basically gives us a list of, you know, all of our customers, and then it says, right, so here are all your customers that are sitting in WHMCS, and here are the ones that are in Prime Portal, and if there's any differences, it highlights them for you. So, you know, if one of the techs was to go into Prime Portal and order that way and it wasn't in our billing system, that would be highlighted on that report. So obviously, you know, that allows you to, I guess, get an overview every day of what's going on and pick up any mistakes.
Okay, so you've got this in place, you've got it working. What's the next step? What's the next thing you're looking to do with this, or the automation around the Office 365 billing and implementation for customers? Where do you see, you know, where would you like this to go?
Well, the next thing we've focused on is Azure. So quite a few of the people who have taken this on, the first thing they ask us is, can we bill Azure through this as well? So I'm not sure if you're aware, Robert, but CSP or Azure via CSP is one of the things that I guess the distributors are quite keen on now as well.
And obviously Microsoft as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, more generally, they're interested in Azure. I don't think they really care how it's built. But again, if you can do that through CSP, it's obviously better. You can wrap it all up. And
so I think the important thing here too to note is that there is a significant difference between the way Office 365 works and Azure works when it comes to billing. So Office 365 is basically one flat fee for everything. So once you pay for an Exchange Mailbox, you get that for the month, whether you use it once or use it a million times. Azure, on the other side, is very much a postpaid environment where you typically pay for the consumption. So if you use a virtual machine for a month, you pay for a month. If you use it for a minute, you only pay for a minute. So the billing there is quite different because it's consumption-based versus effectively a flat rate. And again, that makes things particularly complicated, I think, for people trying to estimate and provide sort of a flat rate. Now, there are benefits, obviously, to a consumption. You only pay for what you use, but then how do you estimate a monthly cost that you've actually got running? So there are some challenges there around that sort of model and the billing. But yeah, I certainly see that there would be a huge demand for that, just to, as you mentioned again, remove that complexity, make it easier for people to go out and sell. But it's probably, like I said, a little bit of work for you there as well.
Yeah, well, look, we don't, I mean, the estimating piece of that is, I mean, that's a hard one to solve. I don't think I can solve that for anyone, unfortunately. But I guess the challenge as I see it is that at the end of the month, you get a bill, and then you then have to add some margin to that, obviously, and then pass that bill on to your customer. Generally, as a rule, if you're not adding any more margin, I guess, beyond recommended retail, you're looking at about 5% margin on Azure CSP, which is obviously not a lot. So for the time that you'd need to invest, once you've got a few clients on there, you get sent a bill by your distributor at the end of the month, you then have to invoice the customer, add your margin and so on. It's a fair bit of time, and it's quite manual and boring, and you don't really want
to. So let me throw this at you. Why the hell do you even bother? Because effectively you're making no margin. Effectively it's the same product. Effectively, you know, it's a lot of overhead for very little return. Why go about this whole worrying process of actually billing the customer for a product you're effectively making, you know, a few points on?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think if you went out and asked some of the people in the channel, they would probably just say that they don't bother. It's just too difficult and not worth it. And when it comes to Azure through CSP, that's certainly been my thoughts on it. So
So I think that the reality here is obviously this is, you know, the new world order. It doesn't necessarily mean that you take a product that's in market like Azure or even Office 365 and you have to add margin. To me, that's, again, thinking very much in the old way. You can do it, but it's all about rolling in value. So if you can provide value to the customer, you can take that burden and make it easy for them. And importantly, as long as you're making money. And the way that you make money in today's world really is about automating everything that you can. The more you can automate, the less time, the more consistent that you are. And as Taz has indicated, the tools are there for you to do that. Now, obviously, you can go to the same level Taz has gone with the development side, hooking into APIs, but I'm sure, again, that Taz is able to offer this to people as well on some sort of basis, since he's put all the hard work and the development into it. Would that be true?
Yeah, so I guess at some point we thought, well, this is a great solution and other people are going to want it. So there is a website up if people want to have a look. And the product itself, we've called it Prime Connect. So if you want to have a look at the website, the URL is office365whmcs.com. Or you can just Google office365whmcs and it will come up.
All right, so what if I'm a reseller who's not particularly experienced in all this sort of stuff, what's going to cost me? How long is it going to take for me to get this up and running?
Initially you need to get WHMCS set up and running, and that can be a bit of a challenge. So just this weekend, just gone, I actually ran a workshop with half a dozen guys just to get them to that point. So that we could then put the module in and off, you know, they could start billing. So, I mean, I guess that was a day's work.
All right, so let's say, do you see the opportunity to have your product interface to other distributors if they were to make an API available? Is that something that will be easily to plug into?
Yeah, but unfortunately, a lot of the distributors, at least that I've spoken to, they don't have an API right now, and I don't know that they're going to have one anytime soon. But look, if they do, that'd be great. We'd like to look at others potentially.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think that, in summary, Taz has got a product here that, again, will take away that licensing, that billing pain from a lot of people, from resellers. It'll automate that process, make it nice and easy to make sure that you've got consistent licensing, all via the CSP model, which is the preferred model for many distributors and also for Microsoft in this day and age. Sounds as though it's pretty easy to plug together, link together, and get up and running. It's not particularly expensive as well. So how many people besides yourself are actually using this? Is it just yourself and these other guys? They just started out. Is there anybody else using the product?
Yeah, we've got about a dozen partners now using it.
And what sort of results are they getting?
I think they're finding it's very helpful. It's just, again, it's taken that headache out of it for them.
So, cool.
Yeah, and I guess the feedback we're getting is now, as I mentioned earlier, about Azure. Can we do Azure? And that's the next thing on the list. And there's a few other products too that we want to, that are not CSP related. So for example, Webroot as an antivirus, that seems to be quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually provide an API as well. So we'll look to include that or another module for that. And I think the next one we'll do after that will probably integrate with SkyKick.
Mm-hmm.
So another popular product is the SkyKick backup. So as we integrate with all these different products, what that will mean is that you can just create your product in WHMCS and have it automatically provisioned on the back end. So you can bundle one product together and it just automatically goes off and says, all right, so this product here is Office 365 E3 and you get a license for Webroot, and we also back up your email and SharePoint using SkyKick. Great, it's X amount of dollars a month, order it, here's the bundle, off it goes and sets it all up.
Okay, all right. So for those people out there who aren't yet API enabled, how can they get in touch with you and get more information about this product and the benefits and look at implementing it for themselves?
Yeah, sure. So again, go to the website, the office365whmcs.com. If you fill in the form there, that'll come through to someone here. And essentially the next steps are you need to sign up with Rype. So Rype are the only distributor that offer the API, and that's who we've integrated with. So they're pretty efficient in onboarding you. Ask them for an API key, and that's really all you need. And I guess just to add to that too, so we've got a few partners who I guess were transacting with other distributors, and it's worth pointing out that your CSP distributor is not an exclusive relationship. So I could be with another distributor and sign up with Ripe, and I can transact on both. So if you are thinking, I don't really want to move away from my current distributor just yet, sign up with Ripe, give the module a go. So we don't charge you for the module until you reach 50 subscriptions. So there's an option there just to get started for free. See how it works, and then if you're finding it's helpful, you can start to transition across. And of course, Ripe will help you if you want to transition existing tenants across. They'll do that for you.
Excellent. All right. Well, some great information there. I will put all the details in the show notes. I'll thank Taz for his time today. Hopefully, everybody's got some value out of that, especially if you're doing CSP and you're reselling products like Office 365. I will warn you, Taz, that as soon as you get it working for Azure, we'll have the other half of the podcast on here, I'm sure, pumping you for information, which may not be as kind and gentle as I have been with you today. But once again, thank you very much for your time. Any other things you'd like to let the listeners know before we call it a day?
No, I think I've covered everything.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'll make sure that everybody gets that information, and I get it up on the show notes when the podcast goes live. Remember to hit Taz up for any questions and sign up to his service. Certainly automating your billing is a good way to improve your profit. So with that, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.